This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace.
Last year, I went through many different life changes. I needed to take a pause and examine how I was feeling in the inside to better show up for the ones who need me to be my best version of myself.
When you're navigating life's changes, Talkspace can help. Talkspace is the number one rated online therapy, bringing you professional support from licensed therapists and psychiatry providers that you can access anytime, anywhere.
Living a busy life, navigating a long-distance relationship, becoming a first step father, Talkspace made all of those journeys possible. I could speak with my therapist in the office. I could speak with my therapist in the comfort of my home. I was never alone.
Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance, no problem. Now get $80 off your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
So let's start from the economy, because there's some good news for the Ghanaian economy, especially as it relates to our ongoing discussions with the IMF for the release of the third tranche of the bailout. Now, Ghana has formalized an agreement with its official creditor committee to implement a debt restructuring agreement initially established in January 2024. This move is a step towards the release of the additional funding from the International Monetary Fund. The committee, co-chaired by China and France, have agreed on a debt treatment of some $5.4 billion. However, each member of the committee is yet to sign the memorandum of understanding by their respective countries and regarding their procedure. There is more in this report.
The development should mean that the bilateral creditors through the official creditor committee have agreed on the broad terms on how the debts that Ghana owes them should be restructured. This was after all the two parties finally agreed on the terms through the memorandum of understanding. The development may also pave the way for a formal agreement to be signed in Paris, France next week. Joy Business is learning that the official creditor committee has already reached out to the International Monetary Fund about this development. It may now help the International Monetary Fund board to go ahead and set a meeting date on Ghana in terms of approving the second tranche of funds of $360 million for the country. The Ministry of Finance in the statement also noted that they expect this development to trigger the release of other donor funding for Ghana, as well as infrastructure projects that are stalled to resume soon. The Ministry of Finance added that Ghana will now move to also sign an individual country agreement in terms of the debt restructuring with each of the members of the official creditor committee. The Ministry of Finance maintained that this deal being struck will fast-track the current discussions with commercial creditors when it comes to the comparability treatment on debt restructuring issues.
So shortly we'll hear from a development economist on the implications for the economy and how things are likely to look in the last few months of the election year. But my colleague Isaac Kofi Aje joins me in studio with more on this development. So Kofi, take us through the details of this agreement.
Well, Elton, first let's start with what this means to Ghana, the current agreement. What does it really mean? So we understand that the details of this agreement that we've reached with the bilateral creditors completely will be different from the current ongoing negotiations with the commercial creditors. So what we are picking is that if you look at the bilateral creditors, what we are going to enjoy is what we call the debt moratorium. So definitely it will be a holiday till somewhere May 2026 before we start paying our debt. So we're going to have a holiday for a period of time in terms of servicing our debt at the bilateral level before we start paying them in full. So this simply means that there will be no haircut at that level, or it simply means that we are not going to enjoy, you know, forgiveness of debt or forgiveness of sins. Whatever you owe, you pay.
You have to pay. So therefore, no debt cancellation.
Like we had in under the HIPAA program. This is completely different. What we are also learning is that the current bilateral debt of $5.4 billion that is undergoing the restructuring will be repaid in two tranches. So the first tranche is 16 years, and then the next tranche will be 17 years. And we also are picking that debt that had their period as last year will be repaid in 2039 and 2040. And debt that, you know, have their repayment due this year will be paid in 2040 and 2041. So these are some of the details that we are learning, or we are picking from the current, you know, MOU that has been signed with government of Ghana.
So clearly this represents an agreement between Ghana and this and the OCCs.
Mm. Mm-hmm. Yes, so these are the official creditors. Mm-hmm. So definitely Ghana, we need this. We need this sort of financing assurance for us to be able to get the next tranche, the third tranche, which is $360 million from the IMF. But just like George said in his report, it's not going to just be the $360 million, but we are going to get other funding. This is going to unlock other funding. Mm-hmm. At the moment, the country is dollar hungry, and every dollar counts, because, I mean, we've seen what is happening to the CD. We need some fresh injection. Bank of Ghana cannot come in like the way they used to, you know, some 2 or 3 years ago, or just maybe last year, because of the restriction being placed on them by the IMF. So through some of these injections, we can meet some of our dollar or import bill, which now annually is around $14 billion.
So, I mean, for the finance ministry and its negotiation with the IMF, this will come as a good news.
Yes.
But this also means that we have simply postponed the payment of our debt.
Yes. I mean, this is like you have headache, or you have a chronic disease, and you are taking painkillers. So it's to give you relief for a period of time, but the pain will surely come back again. So what governments of Ghana must do right now is to prepare itself to go for, you know, a more sustainable treatment when this pain relief or the painkiller that has been given to us, you know, expires by 2026, and we start paying again. What are some of the sustainable measures that we are looking at? But this will also serve as a template for the commercial creditors, which we are talking about the Euro.
Yeah, I was coming to that, whether this is going to have any impact on our Eurobond obligations.
Yes, definitely. And you know, George mentioned comparability of treatment. This is the reason why the bilateral creditors come first, because whatever they agree or the terms they agree will serve as a template for at the commercial level. So the Eurobond creditors are looking at this and are also picking cues from this. That, I mean, government of Ghana came to them somewhere last year, October, requesting for 40% haircut. It simply means that whatever they owe, they should be ready to cut away 40% of that.
Right.
And instead of the original interest payment, which was between 8 and 9% or somewhere around even 10%, they want that interest payment or the coupon rate to be reduced to 5%. Now, they will be looking at this freedom or fiscal space that has been given to government, and they will also come out with their own terms and say, look, you presented 40, maybe we can give you 30 or maybe 25.
Right.
Or you presented 5%. We think that you should up it to, let's say, 8, 6 or maybe 7%. So it depends on government on how to sweeten its deal with the Eurobond creditors.
And how much money is involved with the Eurobond creditors?
I mean, this is the biggest component of the external debt of $30 billion. The amount earmarked for restructuring at the Eurobond level is around $13 billion.
$13 billion.
So if you compare it to the $5.4 billion
that the OCC creditor committee,
this is relatively bigger, and it comes with a lot of complexities. You know, it's more complex dealing with the commercial debt
than the Eurobond people. So with the Eurobond, do we need an agreement? Would that be a condition for further deals with the IMF?
Well, at the moment, IMF is aware that dealing with the Eurobond creditors won't be easy. We have templates across Africa to learn from, the Zambia. So sort of the only thing that has become like a condition for the release is the bilateral.
Okay.
So long as you're able to get some sort of relief from the bilateral and you still go ahead to talk to the Eurobond creditors, the IMF feel that that's enough. But going for us to achieve that debt stability of somewhere around 50 or 60%, we really have to go ahead and restructure the Eurobond. Because when it is time for us to repay the moratorium or the debt at the bilateral level, and we still have huge debt to settle at the Eurobond side, it was really going to affect us, and we may need another IMF program again.
So therefore, what is next for the country now that the MOU appears to have agreed between the two parties?
Yes. So the MOU has been agreed at the group level. So the official creditor committee, like the group level. But the reason why we call it bilateral, it means it's country to country. But it's just that these countries have decided to come together to form a committee to get a certain negotiation power. So Ghana will now have to, you know, meet each of these countries and sign the MOUs according to their own procedure. So definitely, there's still more work to be done. But the good news is that this current agreement will be the needed financing assurance to help us unlock the 360 million.
Before I let you go, like I said early on, I mean, this may come as good news for the country in terms of what we are expecting to get from the IMF, but I mean, in practical terms, we've only postponed the payment of this debt. It means that we have a lot of work to do from now to when we start paying this debt. Otherwise, then the country go about to even worse situation than we are experiencing now.
In fact, you nailed it right there. Currently, our external debt servicing obligation is between $2 to $3 billion every year. And we are even sometimes we are just talking about interest payments. So now
not the
amortization of the principal, the main debt. So just interest payment annually is between $2 to $3 billion. So it means that if you are postponing this and you are going to start paying somewhere next 2026 and you are not able to get or utilize the breathing space you have now
to generate enough
more,
so much
exactly to make sure that your cocoa that is currently, you know, really struggling, you need to put all of these things in place. You need to get cocoa in a good position to give you more than $1 billion. You need to get more from your oil. You need to restructure your mining or gold agreements with some of the companies to get a bigger portion so that at least you get the inflows. And when you start paying, or when the moratorium is over and you start paying, you'll not find yourself at wanting.
All right, Kofi, thank you very much. Let me bring in Dr. Patrick Asumin from the University of Ghana. He's an economist. Dr. Asumin, good afternoon, welcome. So, I mean, this latest development regarding our plans or our program to look forward to the release of the third round of the IMF, the MOU that's been signed between Ghana and the Official Creditor Committee, this will come as a good news to handlers of our economy, isn't it?
Thank you for having me. I think it's definitely positive news. It moves us closer to what we needed. I think that was the last remaining requirement before the staff level agreement on the second review goes to the IMF fund. So I think this is positive news. The other thing, I think, in addition to, you know, selling, getting the...
Yes, Doctor, sorry for my bargaining, but we can hardly hear you. If you can pick up your voice kindly for me.
Is it any better?
Yes, it's better now. Thank you so much.
All right. So I was saying that it is very positive news for the economy because it means that the last remaining requirement before the staff level agreement that was reached for the second review can go to the IMF board, we should trigger the 360 million release. But it's also positive news because the bilateral agreement with the bilateral partners should help us restore or restart some of the road projects that have been stalled because of the negotiations, the discussions. You notice that since we went into the debt restructuring, a lot of road projects that are funded by some of these bilateral partners have been put on hold. And that, so we see a lot of road projects around the country that have stalled. So it's the expectation that once we're able to reach an agreement on this component of the debt restructuring, it should help resumption of those projects one way or the other. So overall, it's positive news for the Ghanaian economy.
About, I mean, the assumption is that with the release of a third tranche of the IMF money, $360 million, it may also help in stabilizing the city. Is there any truth in this optimism that you know, handlers of the economy seem to have with the incoming funds from the IMF?
Yes, I think, any additional source of inflow is going to be helpful for the economy. But I think the 350 million in and on itself will probably not make a significant dent. I think the other thing we have to understand is that we have some reserve requirements as part of our program target. And to some extent, because of those requirements, the Bank of Ghana doesn't really have the free hand to spend or to use the dollar reserves to support the currency in the currency market as it probably would have without those requirements. So, but I think the whole, it's not just the 360 million, but also once it's the fact that Ghana is making significant progress, that should also help with other sources of funding that have been pending. Don't forget, sometime last month, when the finance minister spoke, he says, we are expecting up to 2.3 billion before the end of the year. All of those, in some ways, are tied to how much we progress under the IMF program. So this release, this news and the fact that the 350 million will come, all of them go a long way to help. I don't think the 350 million in itself is what will make the significant dent in terms of the strength of the city.
We are looking forward to some sort of debt cancellation or debt forgiveness. We didn't get. What could possibly explain the stance taken by the creditor committees?
Yeah, this is purely speculation. It's hard to understand. I think it would have been great if we got some part of the debt completely forgiven. That has not been the case. That appears not to be the case. But I think, it gives us, we still have some room. It gives us some room, but this is only hazarding, I guess. I think if I was part of the negotiation on the other side,
right,
and I see how the government of Ghana is still living its life as if, we are not in any extraordinary time and we are not a country in need, perhaps I would take a harder line in terms of giving debt forgiveness.
Mm.
And I think the other thing that it means is that based on the comparability principle, it means that we may not get much from the commercial partners. Because if you don't get substantial debt forgiveness from the bilateral, we shouldn't expect that we will get those also from the bilateral partners. So that aspect is not so treasure.
Right. And then the other issue is about the euro bond, and now we are also hoping to restructure it. We are talking about over $16 billion, far bigger than the official creditor committees.
Exactly. So I think when I'm talking about commercial partners, that's exactly what I'm referring to. Because part of the deal we get from the, it has to be comparable to the deal we get from the bilateral partners. So if you don't get debt forgiveness from the bilateral partners, we are unlikely to get that from the euro bond holders. That's our commercial partner. So I think that is where, the overall news is good news, but I think some of the details are not important.
Yeah, so Doctor, before I let you go, Abe, this may come as a temporary relief, but ultimately, we have simply pushed the payment of our debt to tomorrow, if you like, and with some, we'll start paying from 2026, 2028. What must we do from now till when we start paying our debt to ensure that we are in a state where we'll be capable of doing so, such that the current situation we find ourselves in will be able to ride over?
Well, first thing, we have to grow the economy. I think, the economy is not growing, and generally, so let me step back.
Mm.
Ultimately, we have to find ways to collect the, increase our revenue collection, and also the government has to look at its own finances. But when it comes to the revenue generation, it's much easier for government to collect additional revenue when the economy is growing than when it is not.
Right.
In the last 3 years or so, the economy has not been going very well. So any attempt to, bring new taxes will be a problem. But ultimately, we know we are going to have to pay our debt. That comes from collecting revenue. Of course, in order not to keep adding the state of the government of that is currently spending. But I think, putting in longer term measures to ensure that the economy is growing is extremely important. And then also government say something about this expenditure. We've been talking about the size of our government. You know, all the effects that we give our government. And when the economy goes into the kind of difficulties we are in, those are the times for us to cut those steps. And I feel that none of that has happened. So, I think so. Making sure that we streamline our government expenditures and then also ensuring that the economy is growing, those will be two critical measures that will help us. That will make it easier on us to pay those debts when they call you.
And your comments doesn't give me so much comfort, especially when you look at the current state of affairs. Does it in any way suggest that perhaps we may be back in the same situation in the next few years if we don't put our house in order?
Absolutely. You know, the research shows us that when countries default, they are more likely to default again. When countries go through debt restructuring, it increases the likelihood that they will do another debt restructuring. And I think unless we take drastic measures, and, you know, apart from the IMF program, and even with the IMF program, I don't see too much the kind of drastic measures we need being taken. So, yes, but we cannot underestimate how much this relief gives us, because these are ones that have fallen due.
Right.
But even though it seems like you've kicked the can down the line further up, you cannot underestimate the additional time you need to make adjustments to grow your economy and to raise new funds. So it does something for us, even though some form of debt forgiveness would have been much better for us. But it wasn't to be. So we shouldn't get into the mode that, it is far down the line, so we are going to get back to life as usual. If you do, that time will arrive, there will not be the position to repay the debt.
And of course, and that brings me to my next and final question about the fact that we are almost about entering into the electioneering campaign where promises will be made. Already, assurance has been given that all sort projects will restart. Contractors will go back to site because we have some window of opportunity. Even though the finance minister has given indication that he will stay within budgetary limits, those remains worse. In terms of actualizing those words, we are yet to see. We have so much examples to give, especially when we are in an election year. The precarious situation of our economy makes it very important and stay within limits. But do you trust a politician to do so?
Not at all. I don't. You see, so as a research scientist, I know the government has made promises, and the powers that we have made all the promises. But, you know, as a researcher, I cannot throw away so many years of evidence in favor of the promise of a politician, especially when the incentive to overspend your election period is so great.
Right.
So, in some sense, there could be a possibility that we can spend without and still be within target. Don't forget that the domestic debt exchange itself has brought us some savings. And even this debt restriction that we are doing, even though we haven't gotten so much debt forgiveness, it will also bring us some savings. In the 2024 budget, I'm not so sure that the finance minister accounted for those amounts. So in principle, those savings you made from those debt forgiveness are there. And the government will end up spending those, and those will end up being our extra government expenditures. But what we need is to use those savings wisely.
All right, thank you so much, Dr. Patrick Assuming, for sharing your thoughts on this very important matter. Well, the finance minister is expected to be in Paris, France, this month to finalize this deal, and then they will take it to the IMF to tell them that this is what we have. You asked us to go and then get this deal. We've gotten it done, and then the IMF will take it to their board for the release of the third tranche of the bailouts, and we are looking at almost about $360 million. The expectation is that this is opening doors for further releases to help the economy of Ghana from the World Bank and other multinational company. We'll keep an eye on this developing matter, especially as it relates to, you know, revamping the Ghanaian economy. Now, let me take you to Parliament, because the minority on the Education Committee in Parliament, they've called for an urgent stakeholder meeting to resolve government indebtedness to the West African Examination Council, WAEC, which has consistently raised concerns over government continuous indebtedness to the entity, making WAEC unable to pay the service providers, including invigilators and examiners. Ranking member on the committee, Peter Nochukwu Tori, has revealed that Gabon owes WAEC over 300 million cedis between 2022 and 2024. Listen to his breakdown of the figures.
Our arrears of 2022 to be cleared, which is about 9,972,000 for the 2022 WASE, which is outstanding. Then again for 2023, before Friday, it was 56,515,000. They have paid 10 million. So remaining 46,515,000 Ghana cedis being owed to WAEC. As for 2024, government has not touched it at all, which is in the sum of 178,342,000. That is what they are owing. So if you put that of WASE together, it is 224,857,000 total for WASE alone, 2022, 2023, and 2024. Now, if you come to BEC, for 2023, they have just 698,000 outstanding. 2024, the cost is 95,837,000. They have given them only 2.3 million. Now 93 million is outstanding. So if you put what is outstanding plus the 698,000 for 2023, there is an outstanding money of 94 million on the 2023 and 2024 BEC to be cleared. What is happening is that they are losing seasoned examiners who moderate the questions, who prepare the marking scheme, and
indicated to you, if you take Greater Accra, the interventions that we're putting in, i.e. the Greater Accra Resilience and Integrated Development, the GARI project, that we put in a lot of resources to be able to address the problem. We are solving only 2% of the flooding situation in Greater Accra.
In Greater Accra.
So that's it. So it requires a lot of
investment. So we don't have a handle on the matter.
We need to really work hard. And to be able to do that is to be able to map out the drainage system, and then we can then estimate. Because if you don't have the plan, you cannot even budget within the context of the PFM system. So that's exactly what we want to do. And we believe that if we're able to do that, we can increase our flood resilience and reduce our flood risk, and then be able to address the flooding situation that we have across the
country. So, you know, I'm hearing him talk about the fact that the plan or what we have in place now is only able to deal with 2% of the flooding situation. That doesn't give me a lot of comfort. It tells me that I'm probably on my own when it comes to flooding.
Yeah, he's somehow right, because of some work has been done. Okay, so looking at, we in Ghana Hydraulic Authority, we have this National Flood Control Program, which we undertake every year once we get commencement from the Ministry of Finance. So as of from 2018 till now, in Greater Accra alone, works that has been done, that is what he said, is about 2%.
Just 2%?
Yes. It's all because we try to identify hotspots within Greater Accra where we are able to take off some bottlenecks to allow water to flow. So if you go to some of the communities such as Madina, Oblogo area, they will attest to that effect. If you go to Santa Maria, I don't know, some years ago, you do hear that Santa Maria, any little downpour, the whole place floods. These interventions were put in the Iron City Kaswa. If you go to Kaswa Enclave, yes, this National Flood Control Program has been very, very effective in those areas. Yes, so as we are looking at the whole thing together, there has been some discussions also that you know, ideally we should have gotten a service plot. Mm-hmm. If I say service plot, you understand. If you go to the estates, they put in the drainage systems and everything before they sell the plots to the individuals. So, but then it doesn't happen outside. So people, they get the land, they go in to just develop. So I have issues with that, that once you get there, you buy the land, you should go to the appropriate quarters so that they can advise you how to go about managing the place. But it doesn't happen so. So, and I also have a little bit issue with ECG.
Why?
Yes. It's simply because people are building in waterways, wetlands, estuaries.
The Ramsar.
Yeah, that's good. The Ramsar sites. Mm. The next time you see electricity poles, mounts all over. So I ask myself, it is more or less like it's encouraging people
to build anyhow.
To build anyhow.
Because once they apply for electricity, electricity will be extended to them. Does it mean that ECG doesn't cross check to say that, let me check with assembly whether this property deserves to be here?
Yes, so this is why I'm so happy about this forum. So they are also part of the experts, the stakeholders we are bringing on board. So then we will try to address all these issues. Yes, so the other fear also is that if they get the electricity light and everything, and it rains heavily, and then people are not able to come out from their homes, then they are at risk. They can be electrocuted.
Right.
Yeah, so we need to look at all this together. That's why I'm happy about this forum the ministry want to
have.
Yes.
But again, let me bring Dr. Amaya in to ask. So from policy position, what will it take for us to have 100% coverage if we are doing just 2% now?
It requires a lot of investment. A lot of investment, which we cannot. I don't think that government alone will be able to do that. Mm. That's why there are several financing models to this type of enterprise. At the forum, we want to have a conversation around it. Mm-hmm. There are long-term infrastructure bonds that are available, private sector, public investment opportunities that we want to look at. Because if we wanted them to be on the books of government alone, it's going to take us many years to be able to achieve that.
Recently, the Garrick projects, Parliament approved another tranche. What exactly is it going into?
So the additional 150 million will go into a part of it as rescoping of the project, compensation, which was not originally part. So we have Kaneshi, Accra Academy area coming. They were not part, originally part. We've done a rescoping and going to add them into it, and then also ensure that the people who live along that stretch who will be affected are appropriately compensated.
And I'm interested in the kind of collaboration, if you like, or the kind of relationship that exists between the ministry. Even though you may not have direct control over the assemblies because they don't fall under the Ministry of Works and Housing, when we are talking about indiscriminate building that, you know, eventually will be responsible for some of the flooding situations that we see. I remember some time back when we had this issue of flooding that led to the death of some people, President Akufo-Addo said that he was going to personally hold the chief executive responsible if the flooding should take place in their district. So I'm wondering, how are you able to get them to, for example, now that you have a master plan, how do they go by the details of this plan?
I think that what's important is to build relationship and synergies. Mm. I mean, the idea of ministries working in silos is actually a problem that we're facing. We need to be able to identify the interconnectedness of the mandates of each of the ministries. As a ministry, as an infrastructure ministry, we're working with local government, water resources. Even the Ministry of Energy comes in with the electricity thing that he's talking about. So we have already started a lot of collaborative work. If you take the Garrick project, the Ministry of Local Government is in there. The Ministry of Water Resource is also in there. So we already started that kind of relationship. And we intend to leverage that relationship, strengthen that relationship to be able to build that collaborative effort to achieve the expectations of the general public in respect of this flooding situation. At the conference, we're expecting the ministries, local government, ministries of energy, and the rest to be part, so that together we can build, you know, synergy in the work that we're doing in addressing the flooding.
Engineer Mekwa, I know you are a professional here, but you work directly with, you know, political appointees like Dr. Ama. And I know that sometimes you have a professional view on matters that come before you, but the politician is also motivated by other things. I'm wondering sometimes how easy or difficult is it to get them to strictly go by the plan and stay within the plan that ultimately helps.
But just before he comes in, just to make the point that
okay,
he is an implementer. It's the politicians and the political leadership that actually evolve the policy.
Yeah, but sometimes they are the ones who put together and then submit it to
exactly.
You.
But
and then you agree to it before the implementation starts.
By evolving the policy, we work with the policy experts to be able to develop in the manner that when it's ready for implementation, because they are already involved in the development, then they have the buy-in and they get it. But we listen to them a lot.
Yeah, that is as well. I think for some time now, we've not had any difficulties with the politicians in terms of our engineering aspect. I mean, they always buy into whatever we put before them.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing is you need to explain and let them understand what you want to do. Yeah.
All right. Now, let's talk about housing. 1.8 million housing deficits, 1.8 million. I mean, how are we, or what are we doing to bridge it, to sort of bring it down? I know government is not into the business of providing housing, even though the city housing, you know, corporation. They've been very active in recent times, and the houses that they are selling sometimes, as compared to what the private developers are doing, is quite affordable, if you like. But what is the long-term plan? Is government really going to be involved in this all through?
Yes, I think that, I mean, there's a school of thought that housing should be the private engineering of the private person in accommodating itself. There's another school of thought that says that government must have intervention or must intervene in provision of housing. And I belong to the second school of thought,
mm-hmm.
that the basic need of man, clothes, shelter, and food.
Mm-hmm.
All right? And so housing is a basic need. Housing is providing housing, affordable housing to the public, is protecting the dignity of man.
Mm-hmm.
Because what is more dignifying than having a place to lay your head?
Right.
If you look at our constitution, Article 15 of our constitution says that the dignity of all persons shall not be violated.
Mm-hmm.
So the government believes that housing is a mandate, a constitutional obligation, a moral obligation to try and address that. And that's why we have a lot of projects ongoing.
Mm-hmm.
I think that if you look at the data available, to be able to bridge the gap, we need that big time investment in housing, in building, constructing more houses. We need about 200,000 unit houses a year.
Every year.
Every year to be able to close the gap.
200,000 every year.
Every year.
And if you are consistent, we should be able to close this gap in a matter of what, few years.
But once you do that, urbanization, we have 3.3% urbanization rates. And so it will still, now currently the urban population is about 58%.
Mm-hmm.
It will still grow. When it grows, it imposes an undue pressure on the infrastructure available in those areas. But what's key is if we massify the production of housing in that large quantity, we'll be able to plug the gap. But to be able to do that, government alone cannot do it.
Mm-hmm.
We need big investment. We need different models of financing, not only producing the house, but also procuring the house, the financing models to do that. The data suggests that 5% can own, only 5% of Ghanaians own a house. 65% of Ghanaians can own a house, but they don't.
Mm.
As for 35%, no matter what,
they will not be able to own a home of their own.
House. Our concentration is on the 65%. And what we are looking at is to get big investors, get investment, private sector investment in producing houses in very large quantity, 200,000, 300,000 a year. Mm. That's how we can be able to address the housing deficit. And that is the focus of the ministry. As I speak to you now, my minister is running around, you know, trying to look for investors to come and support us in that regard.
And the cost element to this, even if you bring in a private investor, I mean, land is so expensive, especially in the capital Accra. So when land is not even available, and when you have it, I mean, the price they are putting on it is way beyond the reach of a lot of people. So the asset developer look at it, and everything flows into the final product and how much they want to price it. So even as you want to bring in a private developer to help to resolve this housing deficit, the question is, even when it is done and ready, how many people can it be now?
So the issue is about development planning. So it's not everything that has to be in Accra. If we're able to have lands at places a bit away from Accra, and there's a good transport system, and that's why we have all these collaborative arrangements. A lot of the work, Ministry of Transport, we have a collaboration with them. If we have a good transport system, somebody can leave at Dodowa and come to work at Accra. So these are, you see, we can only resolve this problem by integrated development perspective. Mm-hmm. If we look at it from housing alone, without recourse to transport, without recourse to local government, without recourse to energy, it will not work.
But even for that's what we are trying. But even for government approach, even if I want to take you back to the era of President John Kufuor, all the way up until now, the concentration has always been greater Accra, Ashanti region, sometimes the Eastern region, to the neglect of the other region, where even the land may be even cheaper.
Exactly. So what the ministry has done is to do what we call the rural housing or district housing project. So we're going to construct at the pilot stage two district houses using affordable, what we call local materials, that brings the cost of housing to at least 40% of the traditional materials, the cost that the cost of producing the same house using traditional cement and blocks materials. Right. When we do that, we're hoping that we will then democratize owning houses, across the country. So, because in this case, in our villages, in our rural areas, they will also be able to own a house. I think that owning a house, having a land, is a right that every citizen might have. If you say you're a citizen of Ghana and you don't own a land and you don't own a property, It questions your citizenship. Mm-hmm. As far as I am concerned, and I believe that's the thinking of the work that we're doing at the ministry, to ensure that as much as possible, those who can afford to own a house, they can own a house. Affordability is contextual. Mm-hmm. So depending on the income of the person, then we can then define the affordability. But generally, the understanding is that between 20 to 40% of your income, if you are able to afford a decent house with that income, you should be able to, then that can be classified as affordability. But to be able to do that, we need a proper mortgage system to do that.
Right.
That's why I talk about financing. Mm-hmm. So if you have a mortgage system such that the mortgage rate is so high, who's going to do that? The mortgage rate is high because the risk associated to in procuring or giving out mortgage is high.
Obviously.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Now, when we build an integrated system, we have a national identification authority, we have a national ID system. When we introduce an individualized credit referencing system, then we are going to reduce the risk. And when you reduce the risk, the mortgage premium or rate also goes down. So the whole solution is an integrated system again. Pieces from everywhere coming together to be able to address the problem. And we don't think that housing alone can do it. We'll do our bit. But the government is taking steps. As I said, the NIA is rolling out IDs. Now, when you go to bank, you're using your ID, the National Identification Authority. Next year, the government intends to do the individual referencing so that when you go to bank and you show your ID card, they just do the background check for you. And quickly, once you are able to properly identify it, then your risk level goes down, and then obviously to affect the mortgage that you are able to get. And government is also supporting with the home ownership fund to be able to support individuals who want to own a house through a mortgage system. So these are the kind of conversation
that you want to have at the event.
Let's see how the banks can support us in that.
I'm wondering what role the Ghana Hydro play, especially in housing.
Okay, so we will have to look at the whole scheme to see where appropriate we will have to put in the drainage systems to convey flow easily from
the land area into an outfall.
Mm.
So we have to take the whole map, or we take the land documents, and we do some topographical surveys to identify where to position our storm drains.
It looks like when it comes to the drainage system,
yeah,
and how proper you want it done,
yeah,
you don't have issues with a well planned estate development. I think the individuals are the ones that create a lot of challenges, isn't
exactly
it?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you're right. It is because I don't know why it is so. They buy the land.
Because if you buy the land, even the plan, you have to submit to the assembly
for them to
for approval,
do the due diligence,
exactly,
before. But once they get the land, quickly they go into and start developing. So the issue here is that the individuals goes in to develop faster.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes
I hear that they write their own stop work. So that the assembly will know that, oh,
yeah,
oh, somebody has come here already. So let's,
yeah,
and then we realize the stop work is on, but the project
that's,
is
but that's
is
a done. Symptom of regulatory failure.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have all the laws, the building regulation 1996 is very clear. You just have a read and you see that everything that is required for us to have a proper planning system is there. The local government act is very clear. But people are just refusing because of lack of enforcement of these regulations, and everywhere where there's regulatory failure, there's inefficiency. But there are a lot of work that suggests that regulatory failure has effect even on economic growth. I recently did a work at the University of Ghana Business School where I looked at public expenditure and how regulatory failure can attenuate efficiency in the system. Data across 40 countries using the DRO, called the World Development Indicator, clearly give an indication to that effect. So what we want to do as a ministry is to strengthen our regulatory system there. We have the Architect Registration Council, we have the Engineering Council, we have the Real Estate Agency Council,
mm-hmm,
and then also even the rent control or rent management. All these are regulatory bodies that are regulating the built environment, and we believe strongly that we have to build a synergy between all these regulators and also the assembly. I want to see a time where when the assembly is approving a plan for a building,
mm-hmm,
they will consult Hydro and get permission from Hydro that this person has submitted a plan to construct a building. Can you check and approve whether or not it is not in a waterway?
Is it part of
the law that
established the Hydro authority?
Yes, yes.
It's part of it.
Yes, yes.
And how are you enforcing it?
No, I really, this currently is under the local government.
Okay.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
So at the assembly levels, we have our reps at their planning levels to advise on that. We only give advice to the assemblies,
mm-hmm,
and it is the onus lies on the assembly to enforce it. Yes. So the other thing that
enforcement is weak.
Yeah, that is where the challenge is.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. So now, kind of what is going on now in this country is, I don't know where we are getting this from. All areas that are reserved, wetlands.
Mm-hmm.
Now people are just filling. They go to cut the hills,
yeah,
and they are filling.
Yes, yes.
Mm. And in Accra, I don't know why everybody wants to live in Accra. So where they are not supposed to be built,
they are building.
The Ramsar site. So recently I saw
the regional minister.
Yes.
Going to, I think one of
two. He went to Sakumano.
Sakumano.
They went to Weja.
Weja. And Weja, honestly speaking, if we are not careful, it will be a disastrous. You know, behind the market area and then the flyover. Some years ago, that whole place used to be a Ramsar site. It, mm-hmm, used to be reserved area for the Bali stream and then the Lafa stream.
Mm-hmm.
The water goes there, settled for some time before going into the sea. But if you go behind the Blue Lagoon area, Dansuman area, they are filling the place.
And building as if no law exists in this country to control.
Exactly. So if it rains from Santa Maria areas, Bau areas, when the water gets to the interchange area, it doesn't go anywhere anymore. So there is that backwater,
mm-hmm,
to the community. So if we are not able to... So I was happy I saw him going there to, I mean, caution them from filling the wetlands. The same thing is happening at
Sakumano.
But my disappointment for me though is when he said that for those who've already developed, that they will have to now bring in the Lands Commission to sort of regularize their documents. Because there's nothing you can do about it. But for those who intend to start, those are the ones that they are stopping. And they are bringing the military and the police to provide security 24/7 to ensure that there is no more disturbances of the Ramsar.
Yes, so I always say that there's nothing that is impossible. Once you're able to identify and engineer the place properly, if you go to outside, people are living in... But one thing we should know is that elsewhere, if it is reserved, it has to be reserved.
It is reserved.
Yeah,
it is for... If it is for activities,
exactly.
It's for a purpose. As a detention pond, mm-hmm. so to speak,
yes.
to hold the water, you know, and then move slowly at a particular at its own
after
time.
The rains,
you
know,
but
the
if you sell all those places, you don't have any place as a buffer to hold the water for. That's why there's flooding all over
everywhere.
The place.
Yes,
and again, it's regulatory.
And that leaves a lot of responsibility on the ministry.
So the minister has given me a marching order. We are setting up a works inspectorate unit. I'm sure in the next couple of weeks you're going to see them out there. We're going to
works inspectorate unit
within the public works department of the ministry.
And that job will be to do
and
that.
They will do ensure the compliance. We're bringing together all the regulators together into a common platform, mm-hmm. so that when they go onto a firm, the engineers are checking the architect registration are also checking. You have the works inspectorate also doing their check. So together we're checking about health and safety issues, accessibility issues, and then also general compliance in respect of what the statutory provisions are. I think what we need to do is to really strengthen the capacity of our regulators to be able to enforce. Otherwise, we will spend millions of cedis, address the challenges, and because of regulatory failure, we'll come back and then
square one,
and then the problem will still be there.
Yeah.
But just let me also add quickly.
Mm-hmm.
We're not only dealing with, you know, when we talk of flood, it's very comprehensive. Beyond the city, beyond the towns, we're talking about the coastal areas as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The government is doing a lot of coastal protection works. Between Aflao in the east to Elubo in the west, the total coastal line of Ghana is 550 kilometers.
Mm-hmm.
And along that path, there are about 370 kilometers that require coastal protection. Otherwise, the sea level rise would wash away cities and our roads, the community level.
So we've done about sea defense wall.
Sea defense. So we've done about 80 kilometers so far. Mm-hmm. We left 270 to do. And we
a lot of money
investment
required to go into.
Yesterday we went around and saw from Ningo, Pampram, Ningo, we've done about 95% almost done. Went to Dansuman almost 95% also done. But again, where we went to, which is the Glefe Lagoon side,
mm-hmm.
Moving towards this that place, we can move from that side and go to Bebeisi also. Bebeisi to Toko.
Yeah.
If you move, you will notice that the houses there, the sea is just close to the house.
Mm-hmm.
The houses are moving the road. If we are not able to do something immediately, it will be washed away.
It will wash away.
You know, and so the government is taking steps.
So the plan is to do sea defense wall on the entire coastal area.
Protect property
over 500 kilometers.
We have to do no less than 300. Out of the 550 kilometers, only 370 kilometers require
sea defense
coastal
wall
protection.
Mm-hmm.
We've done 80 kilometers of it, and we're looking at expanding that. But again, the armor rocks, the revetments, and the groins that are done, they are very expensive.
Mm-hmm.
And we require, again, huge capital to be able to do that. Yeah. We need investors.
All right.
We need private sector.
So, wrapping up the conversation, I'm looking at the objectives of this upcoming conference. Foster collaboration, identify challenges, develop solutions, share best practices, promote sustainable development. These are very, you know, pointed, you know, objectives that you've set for yourself.
Yeah.
And you are hoping that between July 2nd and July 4th, we'll be able to come up with workable solutions to move the nation forward.
Exactly. So what we intend to do is that day one will be on flooding or on hydrology.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to extensively discuss day one, do extensive deliberation on flooding, on hydrology, discuss how we can even finance flooding situations. There are other countries that have product, insurance products, what we call flood insurance.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that if we're able to insure some of our public places, we will be able to mitigate our risk, you know, when there's flooding. So we're going to discuss all these models and then see what better solutions would inure to the benefit of the good people of Ghana and the government in particular. And then the day two, we'll look at the housing again. We know of the housing deficit. We're going to discuss the supply side of housing, the demand side of housing, the financing of housing. We need a big push, 200,000, 300,000. We need a big players to come in and support us to do that. Mm-hmm. So the experts and industry players, GRIDA and all the other industry players are coming to share with us best practices and how we can move forward in achieving the objective we set ourselves. And then day three will be on the regulatory framework that we have. So we're going to spend time to discuss all the challenges that people are facing relating to enforcing our regulations. So at the end of the 3 days, our objective is that we'll be able to have come to a certain convergence on the way forward in these three-pronged areas.
Right.
And then a communique will be issued. We do not want this to become a talk shop that every year we'll go and sit there and talk without any actionable benchmark. So what we intend to do is that when the communique is issued, we will ensure that those that will require policy formulation, we take steps. Those that will require enactment or amendment of an existing enactment, we do that.
Right.
And then the following year, which is next year, when we present the second bench, we will then share with our stakeholders what steps we took in the previous year in respect of the communique. And I believe that for all of us coming together and having a common understanding, we will be able to evolve policies that would appeal to the general public.
All right. Engineer Michael, you have the final word on this.
Yes, I think I'm looking forward to that forum, which I believe that we're going to have a lot of experts and then stakeholders on board to discuss the way forward about this flooding issue.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but I'm sure the first day also there'll be some presentation from our CEO, Dr. John Kisi, and then follow up with a professor from the KNA UST, Kwame Nkrumah University, to do a presentation also.
All right.
Yeah.
Okay. So we hope to see.
Of course.
We hope to see the media.
There's a very important.
Not just coming to cover, but we want to see our media partners also participate. Because you know a lot that we don't even know.
Mm-hmm.
You're always on the ground. Your ears are on the ground. So we want you to come and participate in the deliberations and help us in obtaining insightful recommendations for our policy for formulation.
All right, that's Dr. Ama, Deputy Western Housing Minister, Member of Parliament for Kwesi Bean Team in the Western Region, of course, Mr. Kofi Amekor. He's with the Hydrological Authority, no longer department, now authority. Thank you so much for passing through
the
conference on July
2nd
to the 4th. Well, the European Parliament elections have plunged several European governments into crisis mode. After being roundly defeated, French President Emmanuel Macron, announced a new election for the French Parliament. German Chancellor Scholz has also had to face up to the clear dribbling of his coalition government. Meanwhile, far-right parties are celebrating their gains and preparing for a European Parliament where they may have considerable influence. DW's Thomas Sparrow joins me more on this. So, Thomas, first, the German opposition is calling for a new election in Germany. How likely is this going to happen?
Basically, the German opposition and opposition parties have stressed that the election results here in Germany are a clear criticism towards not only the coalition government, but also the Chancellor himself, and that as such, he should follow what President Emmanuel Macron did in France and call for new elections here in Germany. The government, however, stressed that political systems in France and in Germany are different and that there's no intention of calling fresh elections here in this country. In fact, the next regular parliamentary elections in Germany are scheduled for next year, and the government intends to at least come to the end of that normal period, saying that they planned everything from the beginning to govern until the end of the legislative period. So there is a wide discussion here in the country about the possibility of new elections, about the criticism that is being levelled against Olaf Scholz and his government, but the government has so far given no indication that they're going to follow what happened in France and call for new elections here.
So, Thomas, far-right parties like Germany's AfD were particularly successful among young people. Is there any explanation behind this?
In particular, the European Parliament elections here in Germany showed that German voters want a shift towards the right. The main party that won the European Parliament elections here in Germany was the conservative bloc CDU-CSU, followed by the far-right Alternative for Germany, and in particular, the far-right Alternative for Germany. Support from younger voters, and there are several reasons that explain this. One is a general discontent among younger voters that are worried about the direction the country is going in, that they're worried about the economic situation, that they're still affected by crises in the last few years, and that is something that taps into what the AfD as a party also presents. The second element is a particular discontent towards the Green Party among younger voters. The Green Party in the 2019 parliamentary elections came or had very good results, in particular because younger voters supported the Green Party and in particular supported the fight against climate change. Climate change this time around was not as big a topic as it was in 2019, and in particular there's discontent among younger voters because the Green Party is also part of that coalition government at a federal level which is being criticized, which does not have good polling numbers. The third element when it comes to younger voters is that they also went to smaller parties, so they basically rejected to a large extent big traditional parties, and in particular those parties that are in government, and went to smaller parties. And that also helps to explain why in general the results came in as they came in, with the AfD as a party that really gained a lot of support from younger voters in Germany.
So what impact could these results have on the European Union relations with other regions of the world? How could it impact the bloc's foreign policies?
It certainly will impact the bloc's foreign policy because the European Parliament plays a very significant role when it comes to passing laws and decisions that are ultimately not only important for European citizens, but also...
When I'm not voicing Wendy's ads, I'm gaming. Yes! Can't even sleep till I go God mode and some poor soul rage quits. Boom! So I stay up and stay fueled with the Baconator, because Wendy's delivers late.
Are you recording a Wendy's ad right now?
That and destroying your world.
Come on!
Whatever you're up for, we're down. Choose wisely. Choose Wendy's delivery late night. Open till midnight or later. Got him.
Hours and delivery availability may vary.
This is Robert.
Hey there.
Robert is an over-the-road trucker. He takes his business very seriously.
Yes, I do.
Robert traded up to GEICO for serious commercial coverage, insuring not just his truck, but his cargo too, all for seriously low rates, with serious savings for his inspection history.
So, they're going to be a talking animal with a catchphrase like a armadillo?
What the armadillo?
There he is.
No, this is a serious GEICO ad.
Aww.
Get more with GEICO Commercial Insurance. Trade up today at geico.com/commercial.
Hello, Saver. Whether you're saving for that trip to the tropics or saving for an emergency, now is the time to take advantage of Wells Fargo's savings options. Wells Fargo offers savings accounts that can help you save towards your goals. So, what are you saving for? Visit a Wells Fargo branch or wellsfargo.com/save to open a savings account today.
Wells Fargo Bank N.A. Member FDIC.
Important as to how the bloc performs internationally. So if you have laws on climate change, laws on migration, laws on security, that will ultimately impact how European Union officials perform outside of the bloc. If you take migration, for example, only the European Parliament a few weeks ago voted on new laws on migration, and that is something, that debate on migration is something that will certainly continue, especially if far-right parties do have much more support and much more influence at a European level. Take, for example, also the support from the European Union towards Ukraine. far-right parties in Europe, several of them, including the AfD, are very skeptical of the way that support has been played out at the European level. And in fact, you saw only yesterday here in Berlin, the Ukrainian president giving a speech in front of the German parliament, and the AfD politicians, most of them, didn't attend. They boycotted the speech, saying that basically Zelensky is a war president. So these debates that are happening also here can be extrapolated to the European Union level. And what you probably will be able to see is a much more polarized debate in the European Union Parliament, in the European Union institutions, when it comes to these big topics like migration, like climate change, or like support towards Ukraine.
Tomas Paolo, thank you very much for your time. Well, that's our show for today. For more stories, log on to our website, myjoyonline.com, and we have very interesting stories there for you. Admit your shortfalls and offer pragmatic solutions. This is the Asante Kine to Dr. Mamadou Bawumia, the Vice President of Ghana. Some Russians are smuggling our cocoa. We've lost $500 million in 2024 quarter one alone. That's the chief executive of the Ghana Cocoa Board. And then NDC is not opposed to free senior high school bill, minority leader KCL at all forcing. Folks, we are done for today. It's midweek. We are back tomorrow, Thursday, with another exciting edition of The Pulse, with all the the exciting interviews that you always look forward to. But until then, whatever you are up to in the hours ahead, I hope it's profitable. My name is Elton Gobe. Have a good evening. But stay on Joy News for more, because